It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's a sports rush with Brett Rump.
Three ball, Max Landis.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now here's your host, Brett Rump.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Maybe I'm playing on you tonight.
Time to go home on a Monday. It is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump. Matthew Klingenberger in for Caleb Hatch this afternoon. Caleb will be back tomorrow here on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. And coming up on the show this hour, Brian Esposito, TinCast manager, he's going to join us around 5:20. Also, Dylan Sin will jump on. He went to Marcus Freeman's press conference last week. I think that was on Friday. And we'll get an update with what's happening in South Bend with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish as they get set to open their season against the Ohio State Buckeyes. By the way, I saw this post come through my social media today, and it is the most, how did they word it, the most annoying college fan bases, and they rank them 1 through 10. Now, Matt, I'll give you a chance because I did not share this with you. So I'm going to give you a chance, and I don't even know who put this list together, quite honestly. I just took a snapshot of the photo, and I saved it. But according to this list, number one in the top 10 most annoying college fan bases, who do you think it would be?
Could it be a team from Columbus, Ohio, possibly?
Unbelievable. You are unbelievable, Matt. Did you see the post, or did you just absolutely pull that one out of your something?
24 years living in Big Ten country is kind of what tipped me off on that one, Brett.
My first thought was Texas. Because the whole Longhorn thing and, you know, turning it upside down, all that. Texas fans, to me, are annoying. But Ohio State was rated as number one for the top 10 most annoying college fan bases. But you know who didn't make the list? Speaking of Big Ten country, was Michigan. Is there that big a difference between Ohio State and Michigan fans? Because they both annoy me.
I wonder if it's because Michigan fans, even in spite of that win last year, are a little bit more honest about where they stand.
They've been humbled. Ohio State has not had a true humbling yet.
Yeah. One year not making the playoff, not winning the Big Ten, rather, that's not really enough to be humbled, per se.
No.
But, yeah, I'd have to think Michigan fans are maybe just more honest than what they were at one point. But who knows? Maybe that'll change now that they have been to the playoff once.
Okay, you're one for one. So let's go ahead and go to number two. Who is the number two most annoying fan base in college? And I, looking at the list, I'm saying college football because all the schools, the top 10 schools are all football dominant schools. So I would say top 10 most annoying college fan bases for college football.
Well, I would have guessed Texas, especially after the whole Texas is back thing that's going on for 10 years.
three coaches later. Yeah, they're still working on it.
And Arch Manning later.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Alabama? It'd be Bama.
Bama is three.
Three. Oh, man. If not them.
They're in the same state, though.
In the same state. Oh, Auburn.
Yes, Auburn is listed at number two. I did not realize Auburn fans were that annoying. I never notice Auburn fans because their games don't make it on TV because their team is so bad.
Yeah, they've always been overshadowed aside from the kick six, but yeah.
Yeah, so they're a small town in Alabama, and they had Cam Newton's year, right? Other than that, Bo Nix was there for like 6 years, and they still never really made a dent.
Alabama's number three. Number four. I want to take a stab at number four.
The only Florida. Florida, maybe Georgia, maybe.
Florida and Georgia didn't make the list. They did not make the list. This particular top 10.
I wouldn't say anybody out in the Pac-12.
No.
But maybe it's just because we just don't stay up late enough for them. But the only other one, I guess Tennessee, maybe.
That's not a bad guess. They're five.
Five?
Oh, Notre Dame is number four.
For the majority of our, or some of our listeners anyway, I'll just say that surprises me. But
yeah, I'm a little surprised Notre Dame was number four. Tennessee is five, USC is six, Texas A&M is seven, Penn State is eight, Texas nine, which I think is ridiculously low, and Clemson is number 10. There you go. There's your top 10 most annoying college fan bases. Presented by somebody on social media today, and whoever it was put a really nice graphic together. So it was like, I don't know if it's Barstool or who it was, but one of them put that together. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. The news of the day, if you hadn't heard, I know I just got a text on this. Olivia Newton-John. Sandy, right? That's, we all remember. Do we all remember her? You're a young guy. How old are you, Mac? Well, you're willing to share your age on the radio. If not, just tell me. It's none of my business. But
some could say I look about 40 or 50, but 24 is what birth certificate says.
No, I would not have guessed you anywhere near 30. But then again, I didn't guess John Graham anywhere near 30 either. And then he told me his age. Shock. Okay, so... I mean, Olivia Newton-John, Sandy. Have you seen the movie Grease? Do you know who we're talking about?
I have seen bits and pieces of it, but in listening to Doug Gottlieb's show, which preceded this, they brought up some of the other things she was in. I more so know those.
What else was she? Xanadu? You're not going to tell me you know Xanadu.
That one's not familiar.
Okay, Xanadu was a complete dumpster fire of a movie that she was featured in. No, to me, she will forever be Sandy, but unfortunately, Olivia Newton-John lost her battle against breast cancer, passed away peacefully at home in Southern California this morning at the age of 73 years old. So, for those that are in my generation, I don't know what generation I am. I'm not really a baby boomer, I don't think. Am I maybe a baby boomer? But those that grew up through the 80s, 70s, 80s, everybody knows Olivia Newton-John. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. So down in Westfield, Colts continue to practice. They practiced today after a practice yesterday that apparently didn't go too well for the offense, according to multiple reports that I read, and unfortunately I couldn't be there. Had TinCast baseball this weekend, but... down in Westfield, from what the reporters said, it was pretty much a ugly, out-of-rhythm, non-focused offensive day. The defense absolutely destroyed the offense at practice yesterday. Frank Reich admitted as much. Matt Ryan admitted as much. There were multiple drop passes, I think about seven different drop passes by seven different receivers. It was not a good day for the offense, so if you're rooting for the offense, yesterday was not your day. And it was a packed crowd down at Westfield to see it. Because of it being a weekend practice open to the public, it was absolutely jam-packed, and everybody saw the Colts kind of stink under pressure. But today they're back at it. They're practicing and still in pads, it looked like. But it'll be interesting with Matt Ryan taking over this team. Whether or not he elevates the game of the receivers, because I still think that's the biggest question mark for the Colts. I think it'll be something to watch as preseason unfolds coming up this weekend. The Colts start their preseason at Buffalo. Good test. I mean, I'm fine with them playing Buffalo. But Matt, what do you think are the question marks for the Colts? What do they need to solve? Because everybody, I think, has something they're looking to solve, whether it's depth, whether it's special teams, whether it's position group, something that they're looking to accomplish with preseason? What do the Colts need to accomplish with preseason?
I don't know if they can. I mean, obviously they can solve this in preseason, but since teams don't play their starters much anymore, it's a question of will they? It just comes down to, I think, reps. I mean, remember, this is a team that's had four different starting quarterbacks in 4 years. You know, you have somebody, Michael Pittman Jr., has played with a different quarterback now each of his 3 years in the league, and you just can't keep doing that. You have to find your guy sooner or later, and I think Matt Ryan is the guy for the next at least 3 or 4 years, but that's the big thing. And I mean, of course, drop passes are just on receivers, but you have to at some point find continuity. And I just don't know if they can even get that in preseason at this point.
And a young group, it's not, there's nobody that Matt Ryan is really comfortable throwing to. That's why Julio Jones' name was prominent as far as guys that Colts might look at signing. But apparently, Chris Ballard said that was never serious, that there was never any serious discussions about Julio Jones being a part of the Colts. But Chris Ballard is also saying that the Colts are still keeping an eye on a veteran receiver, and that there is still a possibility that a veteran receiver could be signed before the season starts. It just depends on how much this receiving group steps up. And I think that's one of the big question marks. I think the Colts have solved the pass rush. Kwity Paye seems to be playing fantastic in camp. He looks like a new player, and they're able to put him opposite Yannick Ngakoue. And Ngakoue, today he admitted his weight, only 232 pounds. I mean, he's basically like a large safety. 232 is a small linebacker, but he's going to line up on that the right end of the defensive line across from the left tackle and try to speed rush or bull rush even. At 232, that's what's amazing, is the guy's got power and can actually bowl through 330-pound left tackles. But he's going to provide pressure from one side. Kwity Paye, who seems to be improved on the other side. We're still waiting to see if Shaquille Leonard gets healthy and can get on the field. I guess in my mind, the Colts have to have a different approach to preseason this year, because you cannot continue to take the same approach as far as the number of reps your first team gets in preseason football if you've lost 9 openers in a row. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, play the first team the entire game if you have to. But you've got to figure out, you can't go and say, oh, we've got a format that we use where, you know, our first team gets a series or two, and then in game number 2, we're going to give them a half of football. And then game number 3, we're going to focus on the guys that are trying to make the cut line. Can't do that. You've only got 3 preseason games. You've stunk in week 1 9 times in a row. It's time to win a week 1 game, and you've got Houston on the schedule. It would be embarrassing if the Colts don't win week 1 this year. And so in my mind, I would like to see the first team offense play at least a complete quarter. At least a complete quarter. And then I want to see them at least a complete half in their second preseason game against the Lions. Third preseason game, if they play or not, I would like to see them play a couple of series. And the only reason for that is because you've got a 2-week break between the final preseason game and the opener. And with over 2 weeks in between the final preseason game and the opener, I don't think you want to, you know, not play your first team at least a few snaps of that third preseason game. Because it used to be, Matt, again, you're a youngster, used to be that you would play a couple of series in the first preseason game. You would play maybe into the second quarter, the second preseason game. The third preseason game, first team would play almost 3/4 of football. Generally, you'd play the first half, and then you'd come out what you're going to have to do in the season. Now, you've only got 3 preseason games. And somewhere in those 3 preseason games, you've got to figure out what you've got as far as guys on the cut line. So I would like to see the first team get in at least a quarter against Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of alluded to it. We're at a point now where it just doesn't even seem like anybody plays. But the topic that I've heard the last couple of days is, did the Raiders overplay Josh Jacobs the other night? I think he played 2 series.
Or why did they overplay? Because yeah, Everybody kind of assumes they overplayed him based on what most teams do. But they I mean, they played him a lot with a lot of guys that are cut line players.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing. I wouldn't put a starter out there behind a third string offensive line.
That's the thing. If you're going to put Jacobs out there, give him good blocking. Give him guys to protect him.
Yeah.
Don't put him out there with the third team where he's just basically, you know, got a target on his back.
Right, right. It was impressive that he even had a couple of good runs. But I agree with what you said. I think the Colts, any team I think that's in not so much transition, but a new quarterback could probably benefit from at least playing a full quarter of preseason ball together.
The Padres over the weekend got swept by the Dodgers. That's not a good thing at all for the Padres. After basically selling off their minor leagues to bolster the parent club, the last thing you want to do is go into L.A. and still be second fiddle to the Dodgers. And the Dodgers owned the Padres over the weekend. Shut them out last night. I mean, you stack the offense, you go get Josh Bell, you get Brandon Drury, you get Juan Soto, of course, and you end up taking that offense into Los Angeles where, I mean, let's be honest, that's what the Padres are targeting. That's what they want to be, is they want to be what the Dodgers are right now. And they went in head-to-head to see exactly what they look like with this revamped roster, and they lose three games in a row. Not a good look. And, yes, they're going to be adding Fernando Tatis Jr. to that roster. He is on rehab. He played over the weekend down in San Antonio. But, you know, there was a possibility at one point that Fort Wayne might be in the mix to get a rehab with Fernando. But, you know, unless the team is sitting in Cincinnati or Cleveland or Detroit, it isn't going to happen. And so, you know, the stars aligned for Blake Snell to actually be here for a rehab assignment. So for those that thought Tatis was going to fly out all the way from San Diego to Fort Wayne to have a rehab assignment, yeah, it's not going to happen. It would have been nice, selfishly. We'd have loved to have seen it. And he could have gotten in three games over the weekend instead of just the two he played down in San Antonio. But he is right now rehabbing, and they expect him back, they said, mid-August. So my guess is he's either going to make it back for the weekend or he'll start next week in San Diego. But it better be an immediate turnaround. In other words, the Padres better go on a tear once they get Tatis, because, you know, they've invested their future entirely on what this roster is. They can't go head-to-head against the team that they're chasing and trying to become and lose three games in a row. Not a good weekend for the Padres. Meanwhile, Tin Caps, they're going to have a chance at the playoffs. It kind of starts this week. They're heading to Lake County, a team that they are chasing right now in the Eastern Division standings, and we'll talk about that and more. TinCast manager Brian Esposito is going to join us on the other side of the break. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan. And
Purdue Fort Wayne men's basketball coach John Call. And you're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Go Dons.
Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. There we go. We have Matt Klingenberger as our producer today, as Caleb will be back from Nashville tomorrow here on the Sports Rush. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862, any questions, comments, or suggestions, you could always let us know at 46862. Got a text that came in. The Colts need to solve the problem of being soft, especially starting the season. They can't go 0-3 again. Another text came in, said, hey, Brett, Notre Dame Domers are the worst. Hook 'em. That came in from Clint. Let's see. Also, I've been going back and forth on the baseball rule about third strike and allowing the runner to advance, or the batter to advance and attempt to reach first on a ball that gets past the catcher. I do not like the rule. I'm very much opposed to the rule. I don't think a batter should be rewarded for, number one, swinging at a bad pitch. A pitcher shouldn't be penalized for throwing a pitch where you should. I mean, we used to have a phrase, bury it, get it dirty. A lot of those phrases that we used on two-strike pitches, because you want a batter to extend the zone. You want to take advantage of an 0-2, 1-2 count. On 0-2, there's two options. You throw the breaking ball that starts in the zone and ends up in the dirt, or you throw a shoulder high fastball, one or the other. So anyway, you have one or the other, but yeah, I don't like the rule. 46862, let us know what you think. Let's get to the phone line, the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, and it is our pleasure to welcome to the program family man and Tin Cash manager, Brian Esposito. Espo, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm actually conducting a combination of some wiffle ball practice, pool practice, and hockey practice up with my nephew in New York right now.
Man, a lot of different sports in comboed up. Let's talk a little bit about the past week. It seems like it's been a while because now we've gotten used to some of the names that have arrived. But boy, what a week to have to kind of rebuild the roster and to go into a game where you really only have 9 available players. It's been quite a week, a memorable one for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, it's just a matter of closing ranks and march on. You know, I shared with you guys yesterday, shared with some guys in the media that, you know, people call it a game of failure. It's a game of opportunity. You know, some guys get an opportunity to move on and go play for an affiliate or an organization that has a need for them and want in terms of acquiring via trade. And then with that creates holes, there's going to be an opportunity for somebody else to fill that gap within. So, you know, we had some, you know, I believe it was 4 players come up from Lake E, guys that were contributing down there. And we hope that they're able to come up here and assimilate themselves in the clubhouse and the culture and in the workday and in the game, and they're able to add value here as well. So far we've seen some early returns. Look forward to seeing how their contributions continue out for the rest of the year.
One guy who's getting an opportunity, Joshua Mears, he would have had an opportunity somewhere, but now he's getting an opportunity defensively out in center field. And that guy, for as big as he is, covers ground. And it's totally unfair to compare anybody to Bo Jackson, but when you see guys built like that and then see the distance that they can cover, I mean, he bailed out Goody out there in right field and got to a ball that was closer to right field than right center. Just unbelievable ground that he covered out in center.
Yeah, like you say, Bo Jackson's is an elite athlete. He's done it at the highest levels in both baseball, the NFL, and even archery, I believe. But, this is about as close as you're going to get as far as an athlete with that kind of body mass as well as that kind of speed. You know, I mean, it's a powerful young man who's always finds a way to get near the baseball some way, somehow, you know, and then gets discouraged if he comes up empty with balls that crash into the wall. So it's fun watching him go out and play center field. I've enjoyed watching him play center field. I think that's going to be something that's going to add to his tool belt no matter which of the 3 outfield spots he plays. I think if you play center and you're running some things down, it's certainly going to add value to you.
You know, one guy I was really glad to see him come through in Friday night's game. And first of all, it was exciting to actually complete the comeback because this team has come close so many times in their battles. And you've talked about using all 27 outs. And we have used all 27 outs. But unfortunately, it's much better if you only have to use 26 and you can walk off before that 27th one's recorded. But that Friday night victory with Jared Dale, I thought at times that sometimes he kind of opens up a little bit and kind of pulls off that pitch away. And that time he drove it the opposite way, got a huge hit, knocked in 2 runs. I don't know how Ruiz made it all the way in from first, but, boy, what a feeling to see a guy come through in that situation and to get that feeling that, to me, it permeates the clubhouse to finally get over that hump of completing a comeback.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, Dale's had a tough run at it on the offensive side. You know, even just this last year alone, he lines out to the pitcher, hits the ball from the pitcher's ankle, kicks over to the first baseman. But it definitely was nice to see him be able to drive in the winning run in that walk-off fashion. And like you said, Ruiz scoring from first base is just a credit to some of the things that he does in the workday. You know, we always preach, it's not about being the best base runner. It's not about, you know, the best base runner and speed don't really tie in. It's about taking angles and cutting corners and using the bag and different things like that. So he did a great job. But for Jared Dale, I mean, he's been grinding all season long in terms of figuring out what his plan, what his approach looks like. So for him to be rewarded in that manner, for him to reward the club in that manner as well, was really huge for him moving forward.
And contrary to popular belief, you did not give Ruiz a push going around third, did you?
No, I did not. I did not. He did it all by himself, and the wind stands up as legal, so we're all good.
Brian Esposito, Tidcast manager, joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. I want to talk a little bit about what we saw on the bump, because Jackson Wolf now, three straight starts that he's been pretty dominant. And I made the comment that earlier in the season, I thought I could pick up his curve, that I thought maybe he was showing it a little bit. Now he's got great deception. Guys are way out in front. He's pitching almost backwards with curves and fastball counts and seems to be pitching with a ton of confidence.
Yeah, I mean, he's understanding what the league is doing to him. He's punching back. You know, he started off a little rocky, then he starts getting into a groove, and now all of a sudden, you know, he's learning what the league is showing him and how he's going to go about using his arsenal. So a lot of it is just, you know, refining, you know, the pitch shape, the pitch design, and then it's a matter of how you deploy it in what manner to create, you know, hitters being off balance, their timing, disruption, all that kind of thing. So he's certainly going to finish stronger than he started. That's our hopes right now. So it was a really good outing the other day. You know, he wanted the ball back in the seventh, and I was really glad to see him hungry for the ball in the seventh. I just didn't feel like, you know, at 88 pitches, there was a need to send him back out. He really had nothing to prove in that particular moment. So, but it was great to see him want the ball. And then some of the adjustments and the things that he's actually making applicable in the game from, you know, his bullpens and his experiences.
How conscientious are you, and what, I guess, what is protocol for guys that just need a break? It seems like guys play the everyday second baseman, everyday shortstop, everyday third, whatever, but an example is Matthew Acosta. I thought when he came back after having a few days off dealing with that leg injury, I thought he looked fresh. I just thought he looked better. Do guys face a summer fatigue where you can see it as a manager?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, the only problem with the minor leagues is that, you know, sometimes your days off and different things can be strategic. But there are also stretches where you may not have enough guys on your roster to roll out and give those guys those strategic off days or pair them together. Especially when you're going through a trade deadline stretch where we had guys that we had to play every day. You know, we didn't have the arsenal until they were retooled and come from the levels below. But, there's no doubt that you could be strategic with off days and have that turn into performance. Guys get away from it. Guys start to get a little hungrier. Guys miss a little bit more. You know, and instead of just getting it grinded on them every day, they get a little bit of a step away, both mentally and physically, mostly mental, too. You know, the mental separation is a big part of what they do. So, you know, it was good to see him get a couple of days, you know, recover as far as the knee was with health, and then get back to business.
What about the performance by Jose Espada? We were talking about this in the broadcast. It's got to be tough when you see the guy that's your counterpart going out there and hitting 101 and 102. And you go out there with, your 90, 91 mile per hour fastball. But I thought he really pitched. I mean, he used that breaking ball really effectively. I thought his bounce back after the first start of the series. And, you know, in that first start, it was almost like an emergency where I said, you know, mentally, where was he when he took the mound on Tuesday? But it looked like counting down to the start on Sunday, he was prepared, he was focused, and he showed us something yesterday.
Right, there's no doubt. I mean, and the cool thing about it was, you know, he obviously knew that we had a trade, and he actually reached out and, you know, let me know that he was available to go and start and give me as many as he needed. So that was really cool. And then to see him actually have the 5 days in between to prepare, throw a bullpen, you know who he's facing and get a little bit more strategic with how he was going to, you know, deploy his stuff. But, again, his counterpart was throwing 101, 102. That's great. You know, outs are outs. You know, there's no style points awarded. You strike somebody out, doesn't matter how hard you throw, you only get one out. So it was good to see him go out and, you know, give us really five strong innings. And, you know, the only blemish was there was, he threw too nasty of a curveball that Valenzuela couldn't block and that runner reached. So an extra strikeout in there, too. So he actually gave us 16 outs, believe it or not, through his five innings.
You know, I've been talking about that earlier today. As a former pitcher, I hate that rule. I think if you execute a pitch and you bury a curveball and you get a guy to commit to it, how can that guy reach base? Do you have an opinion on that rule?
Well, I do. I kind of am going to favor the other direction, probably because that's how I had a living made as a catcher back there, being able to make sure that I knocked those balls down and kept them in front and did everything I could. You know, those are the things I took pride in. Those are things that I was really good at. So I'm going to stand on the ledge and say that I'm full on board with what we're doing right now, just because it's how I made a living. So
big weekend, Lake County taking the momentum now on the road. And, you know, the team has had a long stretch where they haven't lost a series, but it's time to start making up some ground if you've got any aspirations for a playoff spot.
Yeah, it is, no doubt. Unfortunately, I won't be in Lake County. This is my mandatory series off. So I'm actually home with the family right now, but I trust Mike Daly, who's our assistant director of the farm, to do his job and get us back into this race here.
Well, it sounds like you've got probably more hands full trying to keep track of that locker room than the one than the clubhouse you've got with the.
Yeah, I'm dodging some bats and some balls and some spears right now as I'm on this call. So,
well, and enjoy the break, and hopefully you can hit that little white ball around a little bit, because I know how much you want to get out and do that as well.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate that.
Yep, enjoy it. We'll see you back at the ballpark next week. That's Brian Esposito, Tidcast manager, joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Well, we will take a timeout, and we'll come back. More of the Sports Rush on the other side on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
You're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Listen live at 1380thefan.com.
Glad to have you with us on this Monday edition of the Sports Rush. I am Brett Rump, along with Matt Klingenberger, who is in for Caleb Hatch today. Caleb returns tomorrow, 4 to 6. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. I was just kind of scanning through a lot of the reports, stories, latest Twitter feeds that we've got out there. Of course, one of the highlighted stories or big stories of the day, Olivia Newton-John has passed away, just 73 years old. A 30-year battle with breast cancer. I remember when she was first diagnosed, and it does seem like it's been a long time ago, 30 years. But forever in my mind, she is Sandy. Leather pants, curly hair, her and John Travolta in Grease. That's Olivia Newton-John. Dylan Sid joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Dylan, you're too young to remember Olivia Newton-John.
I am too young to remember seeing her any kind of movie that came out when I was alive, but I have seen Grease. So I do have that going on.
Okay, well, at least you've got that one under your belt. Hey, one thing you did see this weekend, before we get into Notre Dame football, just talk a little bit about the Tin Caps this weekend, the new-look roster. Hey, it's pretty exciting baseball. I mean, I kind of enjoyed it. I know you kind of felt like there would be maybe a decline with all the talent that was traded out of here, but, you know, a big hit for Carlos Luis, who comes in and knocks in the lone run and a 1-0 win. Jackson Wolf stepped up, had a huge start. He's had 3 in a row. You got you got Mears out there consistently now in center field, covering everything from the gaps all the way to the wall out in center. And the Tin Caps got 3 out of 4 over the weekend. Overall, it's been a pretty good weekend for Tin Caps baseball.
I think you hit the nail on the head. They stood toe-to-toe with what had been maybe the hottest team in the league, or maybe second hottest after West Michigan, and they split the series with them. They lost the first two and then won 3 of the last 4, which is kind of what manager Brian Esposito said that he was looking for. You have those trades, you take a day or two, what he called a grace period, to take a day or two to compose yourself, and then you go out and you start playing baseball again, and that's what happened. And they finished the series with a win Sunday, which was great to see. So they split that series. They're unbeaten in their last 5, and they're playing their best baseball since early April. 15-10 over the last 25. So it's been about a month of solid baseball now for the Tin Caps, and they're still on the fringes of playoff contention, long shot right now. But if they get hot, they could find themselves climbing the standings pretty quickly.
Just talked to manager Brian Esposito. It was funny. He immediately kind of downplayed the guy throwing 101, 102, and basically said outs are outs. But it's still pretty impressive. It was fun to see yesterday, seeing Daniel Palencia bringing it at 101 to 102 miles per hour.
Yeah, I thought it was really impressive. The thing for me with Palencia was not only was he throwing that hard, he was throwing it for strikes, and he was mixing in a slider at 90-91 that he was also throwing for strikes. And when you have that combination, it's basically impossible. You have there's nothing you can do as a hitter to prepare yourself for that because that you don't know what's coming. The ball is going to be a strike, and you have to kind of guess. And unless you run into one, you're kind of out of luck, which is what happened with the tin caps yesterday. I don't know if Valencia has the stamina to be a starter in the major leagues. He only went three innings yesterday, 35 pitches. But, man, if he stays healthy, at minimum, I think he's an all-star quality closer if he can have consistent command.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you're right. I mean, you just basically have to guess and hope that the ball hits the bat. And, 27 strikes out of 35 pitches he threw, faced 9 batters, 9 outs, and 7 of them by strikeout. So, Cubs fans, you missed it. I was talking about this earlier in the show, Dylan. One of the great things about going to Parkview Field, seeing these Tin Caps games, is when you see major leaguers 6-7 years later, you could say, I remember when, and whether it was a Tin Cap or whether it was somebody that came in on an opposing roster. I mean, I remember Eloy Jimenez and what he was doing for South Bend, and I thought, man, that dude is just going to tear it up in the major league someday. He just looks like a major league hitter already, and that was in low-A baseball. And yesterday is going to be one of those moments that Cubs fans missed out on because I think Valencia, if he's got that kind of stuff and he stays healthy, look out. Look out. Hey, let's talk Notre Dame football. I want to get to that real quick, but you had a chance to go and spend time with the press conference with Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame getting Plymouth or Culver or whatever again this year.
They are in South Bend. Marcus Freeman was asked about that. They had been in Culver up until 2019, and they weren't there for the pandemic. He was asked whether they thought about going back this year. He said it wasn't really an option. It wasn't available for them. Mm. So they are in South Bend. They do have that brand-new practice facility that opened in 2019, so no real reason for them to leave campus.
So the big question, I think, for Marcus Freeman right off the top is, why is he non-committal on naming a starting quarterback?
I think what he said is that he wants to let the competition play out. He likes the competition aspect of it. They're not going to wait. They're not going to say, well, we're going to name a guy the day before the game or anything like that. He said when they have a guy that they feel is the guy, they're going to name him immediately. They're not going to wait around. And I think they're just waiting for someone to really take control of that job. Obviously, it's a two-man race right now between Tyler Buchner and Drew Pine. I think most people expect Buchner to be the guy. What we've heard is that Drew Pine has been kind of he's the guy that really has a command of the offense right now. They call him a film junkie and all that, all those cliches you use, but he does seem to have a really firm command of the offense. And maybe Tyler Buchner has that. Maybe he doesn't. He's obviously a better athlete. But the question is whether he's ready to step up and be the guy. And we just don't have any evidence of that. Yes, obviously we won't have it until the season starts and one of those guys is under center. But I think Marcus Freeman wants to see someone really take the bull by the horns in fall camp.
Marcus Freeman has gotten A grades as far as his recruiting here in the off season, but unfortunately for Marcus Freeman, they're also not going to win football games for another year or two. So this roster, this football team, what does it look like? Where's the strength and where are the question marks?
Well, I think that the strength is pretty obviously up front on defense. I think that's where that – in modern college football, with as much as teams pass and as suspect as some offensive lines are, if you're going to have a strength, it's probably a good thing to have it on the defensive line where Notre Dame has Isaiah Foskey, who's one of the best pass rushers in the country, and the Adam Alola brothers, who are terrific interior linemen, in addition to Howard Cross, who is also a great nose tackle. So – they're going to be very strong up front, and I think that's going to be the kind of an area where if they can get to the quarterback, they're going to be really, really good on defense, and I think they will. The questions are mostly on offense, which is, okay, as you said, who's the quarterback? And the bigger question is, what does the offense even look like? Because last year we saw basically a tale of two halves where they had two different offenses for Jack Cohn. In the first half, it was a deep drop back, a deep passing game. And the second half of the season, they scrapped that and went with a more kind of air raid, let's throw the ball quick and short every play because the offensive line wasn't particularly good. And so this year they're going to have to do something completely different because Jack Cohn has a totally different skill set than Tyler Buchner and Drew Pine. So what does the offense even look like? We have no idea, and I think that there are significant question marks on that side of the ball as we get started before the season here.
I think one of the challenges facing Marcus Freeman, and I want to get your thoughts on how he handles this. Game one is huge. It's easy to probably hype this game up, make it the game of the century, get guys fired up. He used to be a coach at Ohio State. He's got his background with Ohio State. I mean, this is one huge game for a fan base, probably for Marcus Freeman personally, although he may not talk about that. But how does he get his team to buy into that emotion, but yet not put so much emphasis on game one that it's like the rest of the season isn't there? You know, because I think that's one of the challenges with an opener like this. You want the guys to really be ready and pumped and fired up to go play one of the perennial best teams in college football in their place. But yet you also realize there's a lot of season still to be played when this game is done.
Yeah, I think that is a huge challenge. I think it's going to be a challenge whether they win or lose week one. If you go out there and you put all this stuff into that game and you go out there and lose, that's obviously deflating. But if you go out there and win, it's like, well, okay, we won this one, but we have 11 games left against some very good teams, and we have to be prepared for that. And I think the way Marcus Freeman has kind of handled it is basically a pedal to the metal mentality. They came out the first day of practice, and it was incredibly intense. They went for, he said, the longest practice they're going to have all of fall camp was the first one. And he said he wants them to basically be ready to go in week one like it's midseason. And we actually saw the first day of practice. There was a couple offensive linemen who were projected to start who weren't able to finish practice because it was so hot out and it was so intense of a practice that they just had to kind of stop and sit on the side. And Marcus Freeman was not particularly happy about that. And so that's kind of what he's trying to instill in this team is the intensity of we have to be ready to go immediately. And so they're not really kind of holding anything back. They're saying game one is the season, and then we'll figure out the rest after that, I think.
Dylan, we're out of time. Appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you again soon. That is Dylan Sin, Journal-Gazette, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And this is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Here's your
podcasts by Federated Media.